You're listening to Speak Loud, resilient stories of triumph and hope, helping you to turn your past into fuel for your best future. Here's your host, founder of the 501c3 Share, providing resource and support for trauma victims, and a survivor herself, Tiffany Barnes.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Speak Loud podcast. As always, I am your host, Tiffany Barnes, and I am so glad that you tuned in today. I have a phenomenal guest. I found her online, got to know her a little bit better, and I can't wait to hear the golden nuggets that she has for you guys out there. It is going to be phenomenal. But before I turn it over to her, I want to do a quick little synopsis on just how amazing Rosina Bakari is. Did I say it right, Rosina?
That's correct. Thank you.
All right. Rosina Bakari. She resides just outside of New York City, and she has a PhD in psychology. That is so awesome. She has graduated from Cornell University. She is the founder of an international organization that focuses exclusively on empowering adult survivors, which I know that's my listeners out there. That's probably you. She is also the author of the Living Openly Model of Advocacy and Support, as well as 5 other books related to wellness and upcoming. She has an upcoming mental wellness workbook coming out this year. We'll have to talk more about that. And lastly, she's an incest survivor. Without further ado, please welcome the lovely Rosina Bakari.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. It's really great whenever you can get in spaces where people are willing to understand your truth. So as you know, there's not a whole lot of spaces out there, but so I absolutely value this time with you.
Thank you so much. Yes, we need more podcasts like this, don't we?
Absolutely.
More platforms to get the word out, because there's just, you know the statistics. 1 in 4 women, 1 in 6 yeah. men before the age of 18 suffer some form of abuse. And actually, I would beg to say during COVID and the pandemic, those numbers have gotten worse, specifically for domestic violence and things. So but we're not here to talk about a bunch of Debbie Downer stuff, right? We're talking about some triumph and some hope. But give me a glimpse, if you will, into your life. You know, you're an incest survivor. Again, we're not going to focus on that. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but we want to focus on the good side of things and how you've risen above it. But give us a glimpse in the journey of your life.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So as you said, I have an Ivy League education. I earned my master's degree at age 22, Whoa. Earned my PhD when there were no more degrees to earn. I turned to martial arts. I started advancing through black belt ranks and still raising children and had a wonderful husband. So I was, you know, as they say, jamming on a one with all the markers of success. But I had not yet healed from childhood sexual abuse. I know that doesn't sound familiar to anyone out there, right?
right.
That part I had kept hidden and lived in silence. All of my violators were in my family, so I still had contact with the two of them that were still living. So one day, a family member who knew about the abuse invited one of the violators into my home. Again, I'm sure no one's ever heard of that. The violator luckily did not show up, thank goodness. But when I heard that he was invited into my home, I felt so incredibly unsafe that it triggered a PTSD event. Mm. So my family member thought that I had healed since I was so successful. That was a convenient thought for her since my violator was her husband. Oh, and wow. He had requested my silence years ago. Mm. But I hadn't healed my pain. I had hidden my pain, just like she asked me to when I told her. The only way I could get my life back on track was to heal for real. So I made a commitment to live openly to heal so that no one would ever again take my silence for granted. The big aha for me was that I had become so good at hiding that I had convinced everybody including myself at some point, right? Like, oh, I'm really good at this. And then that happens, like, oh no, you really stink at this. Like you have to finally do something. So I went to counseling to sort out all the misperceptions that we live with about ourselves and the world since I was a child. And then I did all of the self-forgiveness, releasing shame, leaning into vulnerability and living in the now. I read every healing journey journal and book, The Four Agreements, The Power of Now. Watch every episode of Super Soul Sunday because, you know, that's what's
called. Oh, yeah. Go Oprah. I love that show. Yes.
Right? So I had done all of that. And so I had felt I was starting to feel really more resilient than ever, but I did not feel complete. So I wasn't having triggers anymore. I had written several books, including my own memoir, Advanced to Fourth Degree Black Belt. But I still wasn't quite where something was still missing. So in fact, I was still $60,000 in debt and still had medical issues. And I was still not having the kind of, my marriage was great, but I was still struggling with having what I felt like were lifelong close relationships with friends. So, you know, consider myself an introvert. And so that felt okay for me, but it didn't feel okay. So 10 years into the healing journey, I was invited to serve on faculty in a counselor training program. And of course, now that I'm doing that kind of work, I couldn't help but, you know, reflect on my own experience in counseling and what we were teaching. And so then here it was, this aha moment. And the aha was that what counseling teaches, what we were teaching people to do was reflect feelings and to help people feel better. And that's the process that I had gone through. Like, I felt great. Like, I wasn't hiding. I felt like life was moving along. I didn't feel stressed thinking about what had happened in my past. And so I felt good. And that's what we were teaching people, to feel good. What I realized was that I did not feel empowered.
Ooh.
I learned that there was a big difference between feeling good and feeling empowered.
Yes. Right? Tell us about that.
So, yeah. And so, luckily that was only a two year process. I was only on faculty for 2 years. And so in watching this, it was nice because here I am, I'm a survivor. I've been on both sides of the couch. Now I'm training counselors. So I have this like really panoramic view of all of this stuff and so in my head, I'm like trying to put it together. Like, what does this mean? Like, how do I make bigger meaning of this? So that became my question for myself. And so then when I got to this, like, oh, there's an empowerment piece missing. And so I started really looking closely at the program, at myself, at my background. And so that was like, aha, aha. People need to be empowered. People need to go beyond just feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began to work on that. So I started building out the program. At that time, I had been working in my nonprofit organization. And it is truly a nonprofit organization.
I can understand that.
Yeah. And so I was still doing that. And so and on that platform, I had become known for challenging survivors. Right. Like, OK, how do we take our lemons and make lemonade? You know, how long do we get to ask the same question without really looking for an answer?
Right.
Like at some point you have to be more curious about the answer than you are the question, because, you know, we just like why and how. But we don't really do enough to really answer those questions. It just becomes a question that we live with. And so I didn't realize I had been sort of doing empowerment work all along, and the questions that I was answering and the products that I was creating and the way that I was supporting adult survivors, I just hadn't made the connection. Right. And I knew that as they were growing, I was growing. As I was growing, they were growing. So I got that because in my organization, I had always served as a participant. I did not create that organization as a psychologist. I created it as a survivor who was knowledgeable because I had research and I understood what was critical to getting people to live openly. But I still had not quite made the connection with empowerment until I was actually teaching and I could actually see again what we were teaching. And then it just made sense. And so I ended up creating, and that's what I'm doing now. A lot of that, I still have my organization, but I finally could, and people that had been asking me for a long time, like, why don't you see people one-on-one? Why don't you see people one-on-one? And I just felt like I wasn't ready for it. Like, I didn't feel like it was something missing. Like, I always knew there was something missing. Once I figured out the empowerment piece and I could see it so clearly, I was ready. It's like, got it. So the last couple of years I've been working on and finally started seeing clients one-on-one to do empowerment work, not therapy. I never wanted to do therapy. There was always something missing in that to me. And I could not authentically start a practice because there was something missing in it for me. When I realized it was an empowerment piece, I put together an eight session empowerment experience for clients that does not require diagnosis, that does not require an invasive questionnaire about things that you have not earned the right to know, you know. And I guide clients through a professional experience based on my understanding and professional knowledge about how human beings think and behave. And so that's what I practice now. I have an empowerment practice. I consider myself an empowerment expert because I just could not do the therapy thing. There's so many things about that just didn't sit well for me. And keep in mind, I went to therapy and I got better. So I'm not anti-therapy. It was just a piece of it missing. So when I look back on it, I also see that one of the reasons it was so effective for me was because of the skills that I had.
Right.
You know, so I already knew what I needed. I just needed somebody to facilitate that for me. So, and even then I went to a non-traditional non-traditional practitioner. I didn't go to the regular licensed therapy. And so I wanted to create something that I felt good about how I was interacting with survivors. So, because we know survivors often don't go, when they do seek counseling, and which most don't seek counseling. And when they do, they typically go for relationship issues, relationship with their significant other, relationship with their children, a relationship with their families, it's rarely about their own healing. Often 2 years into the therapeutic sessions before they even let someone know that they are a survivor. That just didn't feel good to me. So I just created something different.
I love what you said about therapy versus empowerment, because therapy to me, as you're talking, I had this little, what I call Tiffany epiphany, where therapy is taking you into the past in a sense, right? You're reliving that past, or they're trying to help you sort through it or whatever the case may be. Where the empowerment piece that you bring to the table is, what are you doing for the forward actions, right?
Exactly.
To catapult you forward. So rather than focusing on the past, which yes, the past is the past, and it does have some validity on who you are as a person, your personality, the way your brain works, you know, with psychology, things of that nature. But I love that you're bringing that empowerment piece to the forefront, because that's how you really become resilient. Which is my favorite word. You know, resilience and empowerment goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
So I love that you've done that. So when you had that aha of, okay, this is the piece that's missing, when did you realize, you know, okay, this is my calling in a sense of I need to go out and help other adult survivors? And then how did you know what the first step was to take to create something for others?
So, well, that was the easy part for me because I'm a professor. I mean, so that piece was easy.
True.
It's like, true, create a curriculum.
True.
So, yeah. So that piece was really easy. And so, and that was the thing, like, there's all these things that we have to know and understand in order to become a therapist. We have to understand human development. That's critical. We have to right. understand cognitive development, how the mind works. We have to understand where you're supposed to be at stage four, at age four, at age 12, at age 16. So we have to understand all of this knowledge in order to apply it to our practice. So we teach this. We teach it at the undergraduate level, at the graduate level. So what if you translated that knowledge to your clients so that yes. they can understand? Instead of you, it's like the feed a fish for the day, give them fish for a day or teach them how to fish, right?
Yes.
And so that's what empowerment is. So it's not like, oh, come in and tell me how you feel. And the client and clients do so much of the work. So this is what happens in a typical session. Like clients come in and they're like, oh, what'd you do this week? How was your week? Tell me about your week. What do you think? Yeah. How do you feel? And it actually puts a lot of responsibility on the client. They don't know what to talk about. And so they talk. And so you get some clients, right? They go, whoa, this is it. And none of what they say has anything to do with what is happening in their brain regarding motivation, empowerment, resiliency. They'll tell you about their day and who got on their nerves at the office and whether or not their mother is still speaking to them. None of that has anything to do with that healing.
Yeah, it's not solving the problem.
Exactly. I don't yes. do that. So creating a curriculum makes it, I take out the work for them. They don't have to figure out what they're going to talk about. It's like, here's your assignment. Here's your reading. Here's your video. This is what we're going to talk about, because understanding defenses is critical to mastering your mind. We're going to talk about defenses. And then when we talk about it, we can look at how defenses fit into your particular situation. So to the degree that we need to go back and look at your past to do that, that's what's going to be on the table. But it's going to be on a table in a relevant way where it becomes immediately significant to you, not for the sake of telling a story because you think that you're supposed to tell a story.
Right. It's about the healing. I love that you focus so much on that. And with you having a psychology background, I want to ask you, so there's trauma and trauma affects the brain in a certain way, right? And then we get PTSD, which I have PTSD, anxiety attacks, the whole thing that comes with that, right? The fight or flight. My body was in fight or flight for so long that when I'm relaxed, my body's like, oh no, we don't relax.
Right.
So you're just going to have a panic attack while you're getting your nails done or something because you're relaxing, you know? So explain that to me if you can, you know, not getting too much into it, but how is it that trauma affects the brain in that sense that, like I say, I'm just sitting there getting a manicure or pedicure in a relaxation state.
Supposedly.
And my body's like, oh no, we're not relaxing. All we know is fight or flight. You know, can you expand on that a little bit?
Yes, I can. It is interesting. Without fail, whenever I've gone to a massage, right? Because that's what we're supposed to do. That's what they tell survivors, but they don't get you're a survivor. That's not relaxing, right?
Yes.
So again, if you're not living openly in these things, then you have to do a whole lot of mental gymnastics that will be unnecessary if you just live openly. And it's been rare that I see a massage person for the first time and they don't go, relax, relax. Yeah. Relax. Like, I cannot get to you, you know. When your brain in a normal situation, children have someone who care for them. And I don't know how often you say it on your show, but just to reiterate, well over 80% of adult survivors have violators who are related to them. So that's important. That's really important. That means we have grown up in a situation where we did not feel safe. And that's what this is really all about. And so when you grow up in a household where you don't have a sense of safety, then you get your brain, the direction of your brain goes somewhere else. So in the absence of threat, you grow up in a household and you have the Brady Bunch family. They have conflict. It gets resolved. They take risk. Someone is their safety net. Like all these wonderful things can happen so that you can escalate up the ladder of human development. So then you become a risk taker, you know, and because you know someone has your back, you get to experience love and belonging because you're not always worried about not being enough. So you get to do all these things up the ladder. Here we are at 4, 8, 10 years old where your brain says threat and it's like always screaming threat. And so what happens, instead of us focusing on what's happening inside to grow into this nice stages of human development, we grow with a focus on the external as opposed to a focus on the internal. If everything external is safe and hunky-dory, that's how I build my self-esteem. I'm inside myself. Oh, I have self-esteem. Somebody's protecting me. I ain't worried about the outside because someone else is taking care of that. Well, for incest survivors, that's not the case. Right. So we have to fast forward into adulthood and do a different role. So our brain is like, oh, you must know what's on the outside at all times. You have to be obsessed. Does that person have access to you? Are you going to get in trouble? Oh no, you can't tell. Remember, that's a secret. Like all these things are external. We become experts at thinking that we're scanning the environment for threats, not on a conscious level, of course, no more than the safe person is having these experiences on a conscious level. These are unconscious things. So our brain starts preparing us for threat because we don't have predictability and we don't have consistency. Those are important for human development. When you don't have that, then your brain takes the path of constantly looking for external things. And so you can't possibly remember all these things. And so it generalizes and it holds those memories in your body. Again, you're not like, oh, I think this is like when that happened to me at 4. Like you're not even consciously thinking about that. But your body is, because we're on automaticity, we call it, where your body just automatically reacts to something. Because we're scanning the environment. And so you hold body memories. In fact, most survivors don't have full memory. Some survivors don't have any memory, but their bodies do. Yeah. So what we say is that they don't have cognitive memory, but they do have body memory. And so you often don't know what the trigger is sometimes. You're like, is it the color of the nail polish? Is it even always know. Sometimes it's the tone of somebody's voice. Oh, but sometimes it's like, oh my God, you have the same name as my violator. Like that could, like something minor like that. But the more impactful the trauma, the less it takes to trigger it.
Ooh, say that again. Repeat that. I like that. Say that again.
The greater the impact of trauma,
okay,
the less effort it takes to trigger it.
Wow.
So the deeper the trauma, the easier to trigger. You don't need much. It can be a very distant trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, that's very profound. It reminds me of you talked about Super Soul Sundays. You know, Oprah loves Eckhart Tolle, and she's
I do too.
Yeah, I do too. And his New Earth, he talks about the pain body, right? Yes. So and that's what you're speaking about is your body just has this memory in a sense of these things that have happened to you. And I'm into some very esoteric modalities of healing. And I've done Reiki and I've done, you know, past life regressions and things. And I've had people tell me, you have trauma in your legs. And I'm like, how do I have trauma in my legs? Like I was sexually abused. Yes, I was physically abused, but I don't remember ever the physical abuse taking such a toll on my legs.
Yep.
But it could be that memory, as you've said, is blocking it out, but the body's not.
Yep, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow, that's so fascinating to me. But another thing that I want to point out from what you were just saying is, as adult survivors, regardless of the abuse, trust is such a hard thing for us. As you mentioned, you know, we're always looking, where's the threat, right?
Yes.
And I know specifically in like my romantic relationships, it's hard for me to trust. Specifically, I'm in real estate by day. That's my day job. I'm a realtor. And sometimes, you know, I have to deal with men. It's a male-dominated business in a sense. And so I find myself, because of my past trauma, having a trust issue with men just because you're a man. Yeah. And I've gone through so much therapy and so many different modalities, and I'm 39 years old and I'm still dealing with it. And I say that because I want to be transparent. I want to paint a picture that when you are an adult survivor, it's not rainbows and roses. It's right. not going to be you flip a switch and everything's all better. It's a work right. in progress. But once you've healed something so significant, there's less... potential, I guess is the word, of a trigger. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Okay. The trigger healing decreases the trigger.
Yes.
In terms of, I'm not, so we said the bigger the trauma, the easier it is to trigger.
Yeah.
But as you heal, then it becomes not so easy to be triggered. So we don't get as many triggers. When we are triggered, they don't last as long. Right. Sometimes they go down a second. It's like, I see myself. I see you. So you don't carry them on where if you can remember your early healing stages, I can certainly remember mine. Like a trigger would last sometimes weeks. Yeah. Right. You know, depending on what exactly what it was. And that doesn't happen now. Now it's like I get a trigger. It's like, oh, that was uncomfortable. And I can go right to where that is, you know, and I don't carry it into the next hour usually. Right. So healing is about managing your mind. And that's why I like what I do now is like you become a master at mental mastery. Right. You learn what's going on with your particular mind. And so if you have, like, if you're still triggered by big entities like men or, you know, Chevy cars or something else that's constantly in your environment that you can't avoid, then like in the work that I would do would take you into a real deep dive of the piece of you that's holding that memory. And I can't explain exactly how that looks because it'll just sound ridiculous. People are like, what the hell is you doing, right? And so, but it's a real deep dive, mental dive into where that trigger is stored. I'm not even going to say memory because a lot of times you just don't dig the memory out, but you can dig out the trigger. Like, oh, like I could get you to a point where you would probably understand at least what age you were. And if we can get what age you were, then we can do a lot of work around that deep dive. And then I can have you connect to when I feel that trigger, how do I relate to that 8-year-old? Like, how do I pull her up, ring her in?
Yeah.
You know, I get that's the 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then the 16-year-old, she's over here like, you know, these are all unconscious pieces of us that someone told us, you're crazy if you do that. It's like, no, but remember Freud told us to just make the unconscious conscious and we can live better lives. Did we forget about that? Right. And so a lot of the things that we have taught in traditional counseling and psychology about how people are supposed to be, is not relevant to someone who has experienced trauma at a very early age. So I turn a lot of psychology on its head in order to do what I do and work with adult survivors effectively in ways that other people don't, because they keep trying to stick, you know, a traditional therapy down into people. And it just doesn't, it's not all that effective. It can get them to feel better. You will feel better. So if you don't feel better, you should go to therapy. But when you're ready to be, you know, be empowered, then you need something else. So if you're like really deep into and you need a whole lot of affirmation but I'm just saying that's not complete. And for so many people, it's just not a good route.
Well, I think a lot of people too in the United States are becoming more aware of less westernized medicine modalities, I guess is the word I'll use. Yep. You know, I myself 5 years ago have started to open up towards more esoteric things that are more Eastern medicine, right? And I think society is getting to that point that it's not just sit down with a counselor and talk about your problems, right? They're yep. starting to open their minds to things that are kind of different and out there, you know, EMDR therapy, or, you yep. know, I work with a guy out of Portugal that I talk to about once a month, and I call him the energetic plumber. And he literally yep. is an energy healer of sorts, and through the phone remotely. But he has done some wonderful things to unclog the pipes, so to speak, the energy pipes. Right. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have been open to it about 5 years ago. But to see the results opens your eyes.
Yeah, I did Reiki, too. That was what mine was Reiki.
Yeah.
And all of the things that you just talked about, ironically, they all have element of going back into the past to restore something. So this whole idea about forget about your past, again, kind of traditional therapy, we're just going to teach you how to think better. It's like if you just
yeah.
not work. Yeah, I can teach you how to feel better, and it will work for a time. It's like getting a vaccine. You got to, you know, go back every year or something like that. If you don't understand how to master your mind in a way that your particular mind is working based on your particular trauma,
mm-hmm.
then it's temporary. But if I can show you how your particular mind works, I can show you what your particular entities are. Oh, you have that 4-year-old. Oh, you have that 6-year-old. Oh, you have the 8-year. This is what the 4-year-old needs. It's like, it's the difference between driving an automatic car and a manual car, is how I often describe it to my clients when they start to feel like, oh, is this complex? I say, yeah, it's kind of like driving an automatic car. Right. Everybody, most people are driving around in automatic cars. We got stick shifts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. The manual shifting. Right.
But remember to push in that clutch and get in the right gear.
Right. Yeah. And when this anxiety come or other huge spaces of discomfort, I was like, because you got the wrong person behind the wheel.
Mm,
you got yeah. the 8-year driving the car. Get the 8-year-old from behind the wheel. As long as you have the right entity behind the wheel, you're just fine.
Yes.
But that requires a lot of mind mastery to do that. And it's not nearly as difficult as we think. We just haven't been doing it.
Mm.
Because we've been telling people, oh no, you can only be one person. Oh no, you can only you be whoever you are. All
right.
We're doing is going from unconscious to conscious.
I love that. So let's say do you do your work remotely? Let me ask you this first and foremost. You do. Awesome. So no matter where you're listening from, because I do have some listeners that are in Europe and other places, you can absolutely work with, and you're a doctor, and I didn't give you that credibility when I first introduced you. You're a doctor, right? So you're Dr. Rosina Bakari.
Yeah, Bakari.
And I didn't give you that accolade, and I should have. So, yeah, let's say
you mentioned a PhD. So,
well, I still should have said doctor. You earned that. You totally earned that. So, let's say somebody's listening from wherever in the world or the country, and they say, this resonates with me. What mm-hmm. does that look like if they want to take the next step with you? I heard you say there's an 8-week course, correct?
There is an 8-week course. And if they go to my website, I don't know if you'll have my name spelled out, but that's
I
my
will. I'll have show yeah. notes, but why don't you give us your website and how to find you and your social medias if you want to give that out, whatever it is you want to give out.
Yes, you'll find me most places by my full name, Rosina Bakari, R-O-S-E. I'm going to say another letter, R-O-S-E-N-N-A. If I don't spell it like that, people will automatically spell Roseanne. That's why. Yeah. So I always stop at the E. It's like, there's no A in the middle, just R-O-S-E-N-N-A. And then my last name, Bakari, B as in boy, A-K-A-R-I. So it's just rosinabakari.com.
Love it. And they can sign up there.
On that website, you'll see a few things. You'll be able to sign up for just email. You're like, oh, I need to check this lady out because what she sounds interesting, but I don't know. Then just get on an email list, right? And then you'll get to know me through email. Or there's also my calendar on there for a free 30-minute consultation. So that's another way to check me out. And then there's a link on there that it will take you to the actual page, but nobody wants to sign up for this without a consult. So that you
totally. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. And then you said you have a workbook coming out. When is that going to be available?
June 1st, okay, for the workbook. I am hoping that the pre-sales will start as early as the end of March. I'm hoping that I'll be doing pre-orders for that. It's a mental, it's a wellness and relationships workbook. And the reason is because most of our issues come out in relationships, one form or another. If we could, as long as we manage to have quality relationships, we kind of trick ourselves into thinking we're okay. So we have to wait till that starts falling apart, and it's inevitable, right?
Yep.
So the workbook is on wellness and relationships, and there's a activity in it for every month, because you shouldn't work through these, how to heal in 2 weeks. Like, I have a 7-day healing workbook, but it's not for you to do in 7 days. It's really like 7 lessons, just like my 8-week session can be 8 weeks, but some clients like, I need to skip a week because it's going too fast, or something like that. But it's really eight sessions. But so for the workbook, is intended to last a year. And so there are 12 lessons in it, articles. So you get an article and an assignment to do each month. But there are daily affirmations or prompts, healing prompts is what I like to call them, every day. So every day you have this healing prompt, like, are you thinking about this, thinking about that, that sort of stuff. And then each month, it gives you a whole month to kind of process and think. Because sometimes we want healing to be task-oriented. Like, what do I do to heal? And if you really knew what you needed to do to heal, you'd probably turn around.
Yeah, totally.
So healing is a growth process. Like, we grow into it. And so the workbook is intended to last all year. And so the daily prompts just give people something like, just think about it on a daily basis, but take your time and get through the activities, do them more than once, go deeper into the process, that sort of stuff. So that's the nature of the workbook. There'll be a preview. I'm hoping by the end of March, there'll be a preview and a pre-order that people can start getting those orders in. But this is important. It's not for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. It's for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse.
Okay. Got it.
So here's one of the other myths about healing for adult survivors. Often we get stuck believing that everything we do should be for adult survivors. Mm. And that's one of the things that keep us in this loop of not healing, because we keep trying to find ourselves, and you find yourself in the healing process. And what we're healing into is resiliency, setting boundaries, being emotionally present, being a good decision maker, managing relationships instead of rushing into them. So nowhere did I say adult survivors. Like, we can't fix what happened. We want to heal our inner selves so that we can manage our lives and manage our relationships, not be in $60,000 worth of debt, not be, which I'm not anymore. I'm debt free now.
Nice.
So I know it works, because you start paying attention and you get out of that fear of not being enough and fear of not being accepted and fear of abandonment, fear of betrayal. And so you don't get rid of those things by learning about sexual abuse, because you can learn about sexual abuse for the next 10 years. Learning about sexual abuse, like, I can read 20 books on how to be a mechanic. That's not going to do me much good. If I want to be a mechanic, I have to practice being a mechanic. If I want to heal from childhood sexual abuse, I have to practice things that people who live healthy lives do. So that's what the workbook is about. It's about how, what does it look like when you're living a healthy life? That's why it's called Wellness and Relationships.
I love what you said about, and that might be the title to this episode. It's not about fixing the abuse that happened. It's about healing the abuse and continuing to heal. I love that. Because, yeah, it's not something that, you know, like it's a broken engine and we got to put these parts in it and then we're going to fix it. You know, we got to heal it. And I mean, an engine was not the best example, but I love that. It's so true. And there's so much in healing. Did you see that Netflix documentary called Heal?
I don't think so. Is it new?
It's been around for about a year or two. You should check it out because it goes, there's a lot of aha moments I think you'll have, and it goes right along with your philosophies.
Oh, good.
If you haven't heard or watched it, you should watch it. It's called Heal.
Okay.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, we're running out of time. So there's a few things here I want to talk about before we end. First and foremost, what do you hope the listeners will take away from today's episode?
What I want to give to listeners, I'll say, is hope. I hope they take away hope. I want them to hear hope in that they're not crazy. There's nothing wrong with you. That there is a way for you to be more of your beautiful, authentic self.
Yes.
When you are your beautiful, authentic self, you will find your way to empowerment. But feeling good is not the same. That's not the portal to your beautiful, authentic self. Mm-hmm. Empowerment is the portal to your beautiful, authentic self. Often what we feel, and we haven't done a great job of pinpointing this in the field and in our practices, what we feel is a lack of power from what happened to us.
Yes. Yes.
So going for empowerment.
Yes. Right? Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah. And so for survivors who have been doing a lot of stuff, and you know there's a lot of us who've been doing a lot of stuff like me and still feel like, but something, chances are it's empowerment. Like I feel good, but somehow my life still doesn't quite feel like my own.
Right. So that begs the question, what makes you feel empowered?
So I feel empowered. We already talked about the trigger. So, you know, not, it's rare that I have a trigger now. That's empowering. But also, what I really try and get at toward the end of these eight session eight is all about like, where do you belong in the world? Exploring with you. And it's not a definitive answer. My goal is to open you up to all of these things about empowerment. And the last piece of that is, where do you belong in the world? Where are you going to insert yourself in the world? So that's why I do this work that I do, right? Like, what are you going to give to this world? Here's the thing about survivors. When something so huge feels like it's been taken away, we often live with a sense of searching for something to be replaced in us. Mm. And we often don't see ourselves as initiators, helping other people. Like we'll say, I feel everything, which is not the same. That's part of the dysfunction, being an empath and da da da. But how do I show up and be bigger and better? Like we talked earlier, I don't know if we were recording yet or not, but like, yeah, I need to get this on YouTube. I'm going to do this. It's like, I'm going to. This is how I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up bigger. I'm going to show up better. I'm not going to sit here and wait for the next person to offer me something. That's what I was doing, which is why I wasn't getting the work that I wanted. Because I was like, somebody come and show me something. Somebody come and give me, right? It's like, oh my God, I can actually create my own job. Oh my God, I could actually do something that's not what someone taught me to do. You know, like I get to actually act on the world. That's what makes me feel empowered. And I think too often survivors are not given permission, or we sit around waiting for permission to do something. We're so hungry to fit in and be normal. Empowerment, I think, is when you stop trying to be normal and do something with that extra special you got.
Yes. Yes. And I can see, I mean, nobody can see you, but I can see the passion and the fire and the light coming out of your ears and your eyes and your mouth. It's awesome. So I want to ask you a very deep question. I want you to think about it before you answer.
Okay.
Who is Dr. Racina Bakari?
She is anything and everything that is outside of the box in which she never belonged in.
Yes. I love that. Yeah, you are unique, Mama. And you are what I call a light worker, because you are just shining your light. And there's so many dark places, and I know that you're shining light. And I know this empowers you. I end every episode on 20 questions.
All right.
So I'm not going to ask you 20 questions, as you know. I'm just going to ask you one. Yeah. So pick a number between 1 and 20.
7, the age in which I experienced my first assault. So it's got to be a good question. Help me bring out of it. It's got to be something good.
Okay.
Bring some light to it.
Well, all right. I don't know if this is going to be the best question that you wanted. Okay. What is your biggest regret and why?
See, that is the right thing. See how the universe did that?
It did that. Yeah. What is your biggest regret and why? Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Wow. My biggest regret, and I really don't focus on a word regret. I don't really have a lot of regrets, but if I have to call it a regret, then my biggest regret was, I have 2 children. I love them both. They're both wonderful. I have great relationships with them. Great. A lot of the work that I do with survivors now centers around parenting. And that's a whole nother, you got to bring me back so we can have that episode.
Okay.
But one of the reasons I do so much work is because my son has some issues, he's almost 30, so he gets to tell his own side of the story. So I don't want to go into that a lot. But at the point where I realized that he was starting to have some issues, I was thick into being unhealed. Even as a psychologist, when you are not healed, everything is huge. Every problem is 10 times bigger than what it needs to be. Mm. So when you have a child and your child isn't being who you need to be, who you need them to be, that wasn't always the case. And so when he stopped being who I needed him to be, I hope people hear the dysfunction in that.
Yes. Yes. I see.
then I didn't make good decisions. I did not make good parenting decisions. And that's probably my biggest regret. In the end, everything turns out, but I that was one time in my life. I'm like, you didn't make good decisions around that. You really didn't make great decisions around that at all. Yeah. If it's something in the book, I can fake it till I make it. It's hard to fake being. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things you can put whipped cream on and it look okay. But parenting, that's hard. That's hard. So that's probably my biggest regret. And he and I have had many conversations about that. So,
yeah. Well, like you say, you don't call it regret because you look at the silver lining of it, right? And how he's turned out. And it's his own story. So And I would say I'm not a parent. I did raise my sister for a time. I took her out of foster care. But I can only imagine what it's like coming from the background you've come from as a child and then having to correct it all as a mother.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's another show. Ooh, we got to come back and do that.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm totally down. I haven't had any repeat guests. You'd be my first, but I'm totally down. Like, I have loved this conversation. You and I like jive so much, and I just love what you're doing. Like I say, and you're a wealth of knowledge. You are such a light in this world. Seriously, I'm so glad I reached out to you and came across what you're doing, and just keep on shining. Love it.
Likewise. I will look for you on YouTube. Hey, there it is. The next one time we do the show, it's going to be on.
You got it. You're calling me out. I love it. Let's do it. We're going to speak loud. We're going to speak loud on YouTube.
That's right. So
That's awesome. All right. Any final words before we end?
I just really want to thank you and value you for bringing out the light in people, giving people space to have their own light and be that reflection. Because as you know, light has to be reflected.
Yes.
Right.
So
thank you for allowing space where that can be reflected and for being a voice, because this is so, it's so critical and it's the bomb when survivors have spaces where they can hear themselves, see themselves in the world. Nothing's more precious than that. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That means more to me than you will ever know. I appreciate it. Yeah. All right. Without further ado, you guys, if you took something from this episode, please be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. If there's somebody out there that you think, man, this is something so-and-so needs to hear, share it with them. Go follow Dr. Rosina. Did I say it right? Rosina. Okay. Yeah. Bakari. And as always, be the change you wish to see in this world. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Speak Loud. If this message resonated with you, please feel free to share it with anyone you feel could use the support. To find out more information about SHARE, our movement, and to join the cause, please visit sharethemovement.org. Until next time.